2.
CFRC's annual funding drive campaign is now underway through December 31st. Help us raise $25,000 to support our local arts and artists and keep our community informed with local news, concerts, and event listings on air and on our website. Visit CFRC.ca today and make your gift to Kingston's longest-running broadcaster serving our community since 1922. Get a tax receipt via Queen's University or get sweet CFRC swag and enter to win our raffle draws featuring gifts from amazing local donors. For every $5 donated, you get one more chance to win. Thank you for your support.
Good afternoon. My name is Bruce Swan. I graduated in Commerce 72. And I'm back after 53 years of being away from Queens. And I'm listening to CFRC. And when I was at Queens, I listened to CFRC. And so I'm glad to be here.
Good morning. It is 11 a.m. on Friday, December 12th, and you're tuned in to CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist, Christina Laurie, and this is Kingston Currents. CFRC's news programming is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. In today's episode, we'll be covering some highlights from last week's Kingston City Council meeting, a new mental health resource launched by four Queen's students, and a few stories to get you into the holiday spirit, including the success of this year's Toys for Tickets campaign, the Kingston General Hospital Teddy Bear campaign, and this year's Downtown Kingston Pewter Ornament Collection. Now let's dive into the latest from Kingston City Council. With an eye on supporting education, waterfront activity, and tourism, Council unanimously voted at their last meeting on Tuesday to explore options to waive or discount dockage fees at city-operated marinas and ports, specifically for vessels that contribute to community and tourism events or that offer free educational or public programming. The motion brought forward by Councillor Don Amos specifically references the tall ship St. Lawrence II, based out of Portsmouth Olympic Harbor. The ship, which calls Kingston's waterfront home, offers hands-on experiential education programs. Chris Chafe, Executive Director of Tallship Expeditions Canada Brigantine, came before Council to speak on behalf of the program and its impact.
Over the years, our community has grown increasingly distanced from the water as a result of ever-compounding barriers to access. Even low-barrier avenues have become prohibitively expensive and are often viewed as not for them by some economically disadvantaged and racialized Kingstonians. Half the youth we serve have never been on the water. This is a trend we want to see reversed by breaking down those barriers and enabling access for underserved members of our community. The lake isn't just a pretty backdrop. It isn't just a racetrack for wealthy sailors, nor is it a fishing pond for the well-to-do. The lake is the biggest public space we have and should be available to everyone. We've made an offer to staff to operate a barrier-free sailing and water access program to the community, as well as to open a boater and education space available to boaters and visitors at POH and the community more broadly in the past OLS location. The city recently made a sizable investment in that space to support the sleeping cabin project, which has now been sitting vacant for 2 years. We are offering the opportunity to breathe new life into a space by opening it to the public. It's been difficult for us to understand the city's position on mooring fees. All the ports we visit, Thunder Bay, St. John's, New York City, Halifax, Yananaque, over a month in Lunenburg. All of these spaces were provided free of charge, and they were very happy to have us there, right, to open up the boat, to have youth engage with the ship. The only exception seems to be Kingston.
City staff are already in the process of reviewing Portsmouth Olympic Harbor as part of a broader visioning process. That work is focused on aligning site uses with Kingston's waterfront, supporting sailing, water sports, community access, and other opportunities. In bringing the motion forward, Councillor Amos pointed to the role tall ships and other specialty vessels play in strengthening Kingston's tourism profile, supporting waterfront activity, and fostering community pride. He also noted that other Canadian ports and marinas, such as Halifax and St. John's, already have programs in place that waive or reduce docking fees for educational and charitable vessels in recognition of their public value.
If you think of the 1800s, our waterfront was plastered with these type of ships, and now we don't have that. We don't have this type of ship that's coming into our ports very often, and this is a tourism opportunity for us. This is an opportunity for people to come out onto the dock, jump on the boat, see what a tall ship is about, and it's done for free. So it's something that our downtown tourism can sink their teeth into. It's something that if you're new to Kingston, if you're new to the country, and you're not familiar with the tall ships, you can see one that's actually working. And then any youth who has any sort of curiosity about our water and wants to see what a tall ship is about, what a great opportunity to come down with your family and have a tour of the boat and see what it's about. This, as we heard from our delegation today, that boat travels all over Eastern Ontario, well, all over Ontario, really, Lake Ontario, and then through the Atlantic Ocean from New York City to Halifax and everywhere along the eastern seaboard. This is an opportunity for us to really lean into our tall ship experience here in Kingston. This is its home dock. This is an opportunity for us to really bring something forward where the public can enjoy it and Kingston can take pride in it. You heard the captain speak. He is now going to be going through Tourism Kingston, and it'll be representing us at other ports. We need to embrace at our end its home port and what we can do for it. We are a city that says we thrive on history and innovation. History is here, and we have an opportunity to support it and let it thrive.
With council support, city staff are set to report back to council in the second quarter of 2026, with options for implementing fee waivers or cost reductions at city-operated marinas, along with an analysis of the financial costs and benefits to the city. At their last meeting on Tuesday, council voted to move forward with an expansion of support for heritage property owners, addressing an issue that's been growing across Kingston and the province. Changes made in 2023 to the Ontario Heritage Act shifted municipalities away from using listing as a long-term tool to protect heritage properties. As a result, many municipalities moved to formally designate previously listed properties before protections were lost. This has led to a sharp increase in heritage designations over the past 2 years. At the same time, the insurance industry has entered what's known as a hard market, with rising premiums linked to increasing environmental disasters. In this climate, some heritage property owners have reported difficulty securing insurance or facing higher premiums. While the province maintains that heritage designation alone should not affect insurance, in Kingston, a growing number of property owners have raised concerns about affordability and access to insurance. In some cases, this has resulted in council opting not to designate a property or, in one case, repealing an existing designation. These concerns led to a motion in August 2025 when council called on the province and insurance companies to explain why some heritage-designated properties were facing higher premiums or denied coverage altogether. When the report on the issue returned to council on Tuesday, Councillor Brandon Tozzo asked for an update on the city's outreach efforts.
Insurance costs have been such a challenge, I know, for some of our heritage properties. Have we had any movement from the province on this of dealing with this? Because the report doesn't really speak to any discussions from the province on their end of doing anything about the insurance industry.
We haven't received any further information from the province related to this. There has been a little bit of movement from the National Trust of Canada, which has set up a new a support program for heritage properties as it relates to insurance.
That update came alongside a new set of recommendations from staff focused on expanding financial support for heritage property owners. The report recommended doubling the budget for the Heritage Property Grant Program to $200,000 per year, starting in 2026, and developing a new zero-interest loan program to help cover larger and more costly conservation and restoration projects. In addition, the report recommends exploring options for improving heritage protections, especially in rural Kingston. With unanimous support from Council, staff are set to act on these recommendations and report back in late 2026. Councillor Connie Glenn spoke to the challenges the insurance issue has created and expressed hope that expanded financial support will help ease the pressure for heritage property owners.
This has been a very difficult time and a very difficult topic to manage. And I think that what you're proposing is thoughtful. I think it's helpful and it supports what we value so much here in Kingston. So no questions for you. I'm well aware of all the issues that we're trying to navigate, but I appreciate the approach and the care that's been taken.
While uncertainty remains without clear action from the province, the city is moving forward with local solutions. With the growing need for affordable and supportive housing in Kingston, the city is taking steps towards new ways to help fund future projects. Back in April 2025, Council directed staff to explore the feasibility of using community bonds as a funding tool for municipal initiatives. At their meeting on December 2nd, staff returned to Council with a report and recommendations on how Kingston could begin moving in that direction. Community bonds are typically issued by nonprofits or charities, allowing residents and organizations to invest directly in local projects while earning a modest financial return. In addition to the financial benefit, they offer a social return by keeping investment dollars working within the community. Staff noted that this model has already been used successfully in several Ontario communities, including Toronto, Halliburton, Hamilton, and Ottawa.
One of the interesting ones was in Halliburton. They raised $850,000 in less than 9 weeks. So it was a really an efficient process with respect to that. Indwell Hopes and Homes, which I think is listed in the report, they just launched a $15 million project for a new rental building with 160 units in it. And I actually was just looking yesterday at an initiative that's been announced in Grey County. And it's actually, they're looking at the potential for community bonds, and it's actually through their Community Development Corporation, Community Investment Corporation that they have there. So which is also a new one. And that's the first one that actually has been linked to a municipality.
With unanimous support from Council, the city will now work with Tapestry Community Capital, a nonprofit consultancy that specializes in community bond financing, to assess whether this model could work for affordable housing in Kingston. That process will include consultations with potential investors and community organizations, as well as a community readiness assessment in the coming months. Councillor Connie Glenn spoke to the potential impact of this new approach.
I think we have an opportunity here again to get some more affordable housing into our community. And I'm looking forward to the report coming back from Tapestry, provided everyone supports us moving ahead, to see what our community can do. This gives the opportunity for everyone in Kingston who is concerned about this issue to contribute. So it's not just for big investors. This is for all of us who maybe have a few dollars to put in, who want to see our community flourish. The amount of community building that's coming out of this, one of the things that was noted at the meeting was that oftentimes once the bond matures, people simply turn around and reinvest it in another project. And it's something to be able to walk past a project that's been built and say, I helped to do that. So I'm keeping my fingers and toes crossed that we can see something really positive come out of this community that will help to, you know, get us further along in the process of providing homes and creating a stronger community.
The staff report also highlights the urgency behind the move. In 2023, Kingston's median household income rose by about 5%, while rental prices jumped between 10 and 14% across 1-, 2-, and 3-bedroom units. Continuing a trend seen both locally and across the country.
Once again, those were a few updates from last week's City Council meeting. Council's next meeting, the final one before the end of 2025, will be this coming Tuesday on December 16th. Four Queen's students have launched a mental health tool designed just for students. CEDL.ca is a free, verified directory of supports for university campuses across the country. I sat down with the team to learn how it all started, what they discovered, and their hopes for the future.
My name is Yohanathan Chikargi. I am a second year in health sciences, and I'm responsible for the technology aspect within CEDL.
My name is Tobori Akpoyebe. I am also a second year of health science. I am responsible for marketing.
My name is William Wu. I'm also in second year health sciences, and my role is financially planning the events at CEDL.
My name is Sharman Dabidian. I'm in second year of health sciences, and my role is with the operations of CEDL.
The idea for CEDL began in their first year at Queen's, when the group noticed the struggle that comes with navigating university life and mental health.
Essentially, last year, we all started university, and so we recognized that that was kind of like a time where we had a bunch of new experiences, whether that be through meeting different peoples, different clubs, and so there's a lot of strain. A lot of the time you can get so immersed within like all the different learnings that you do, and you can kind of put your mental health on a back burner. And so we started talking a little bit, and we recognized it's much, much more common than you'd expect. And so we really wanted to do something about that. And that's where CEDL came from. We really thought, okay, if this is such a recurring problem, how can we make mental health resources more accessible to everybody, especially within the university context?
Each founder took on a role and built a platform that filters resources by category, identity-affirming supports, and more.
The first thing we thought about is making a directory. So essentially, having a place where you'd be able to really see all these resources, especially because you can more so grasp, okay, is there a disparity within this community? Like, can we address that as well? Beyond that, we started thinking, okay, how do we filter out these resources? So whether it's like a BIPOC resource or LGBTQ plus IA, or whether that be a specific type of support, crisis line, community counseling, we thought about filtering as well.
We have various different categories of resources on our website. We have like online resources and in-person resources. And the way that our website really works is that we have specific campuses across Canada the students can choose from. For example, Queen's University. And based off of that campus, there's different resources around them that they can have access to and that they will see. And if it's like an in-person resource, we have a feature where it says like how many kilometers that campus is away from that resource. We provide various different types of categories throughout our depository so that students can really go through these categories and pick a resource that's more tailored and catered towards their mental health needs.
The team says that students are uniquely vulnerable because of factors like workload and change in environment.
I think especially for students, we're always in such a busy time of our lives, whether it's clubs, making new friends, schoolwork, classes. It's always super busy, and people really just put their mental health in the back of their mind. They don't really focus on it. They're just too busy with their work, with their life. Yes, we do all this work as students. Yes, we're so busy, but we also need to be happy with our lives. We need to make sure that we're doing something that we are happy with. And that's why mental health is so important, just to make sure that you are not only being successful, but also that you are happy with the state of life that you have.
The team also pointed to the stigma that comes with discussing mental health and the role of education and institutions in addressing this.
I think a big thing, a lot of the time there is this sort of stigma that's associated with mental health. Somebody could be perceived as weak in that regard because they are looking for that mental health. I think education plays such a fundamental role when it comes to that seeking of support. I think making different awareness campaigns and really just showing that, hey, this is an acceptable thing. You should be reaching out to support because, as Sharman mentioned, success, that's a part of your success in life. It's your whole quality of life is based on the way that you sort of see these things, and having that background and that level of support is so necessary. So I would definitely say when it comes to universities and campuses, more so making it more accessible and more known that, hey, this is totally an option and there's no stigma associated with it.
I was also going to say that's why CETL is so important in that manner in regards, because we provide that resource that universities can go ahead and share. It's really hard to gather these different resources and put them together in a depository, but we've already done that and provided it for the general population. So universities can then use CETL to kind of help educate others also about the different mental health support systems and resources that exist throughout Canada.
While mapping resources across the country, the team uncovered some gaps, especially in Northern and Indigenous communities.
I think there's a diverse variety of resources available for many like students in universities, such as like in Ontario and like British Columbia, for example, but like other provinces and territories, especially the Northern territories, there's a huge like disparity in the resources that they have available. There's not many like helplines. There's not many like community counseling resources. And it's very, very sad that there are these disparities, because especially in the like Northern territories, these communities themselves are highly populated with Indigenous peoples, and it's very unfortunate that these communities are lacking these important mental health services and needs. And that's some disparity that we've realized that exists, and that's something we also want to address.
Moving forward, using their database, the team wants to work with universities and governments to fill these gaps and improve access to mental health resources nationwide.
One thing that we've realized is by kind of making a list of like resources, we can also figure out what's missing from these communities. If we have XYZ resources in this community, we also know, oh, we're missing this resource. So by figuring out these disparities, we can kind of do a study and see, oh, these different university campuses, these different cities are missing these resources. So we should be collaborating with the government, collaborating with these universities so that we can expand and make sure that these missing resources are filled in so that all students have access to all different types of resources for their mental health needs. And an example of this is like Indigenous specific resources. There are some universities that are lacking these resources. So a next step would be to reach out to these universities and say, oh, your city is lacking like Indigenous specific resources for mental health. We need to do something about this. This is a huge problem. And how can we go forward? So that's kind of the next step and next kind of vision that we have with CETL and what we plan on doing in the future.
Yeah, for sure. I agree. I think something that's important is we are trying to build that trust and that rapport with a bunch of different universities and students, because I think something that's super important is knowing that these resources are ethical and verified, and they're very accurate to these different needs. So I think, yeah, something we do want to work on in the future as well is more so building that rapport, expanding on it.
In response to feedback from students, the CETL team is also looking into adding OHIP and UHIP coverage information to make costs clearer. Once again, CETL.ca is free, no login, and already being used on multiple campuses. The team hopes it becomes a trusted tool and a catalyst for change in student mental health support. For more information, you can visit CETL.ca. Before we get into more local news, I'm going to turn to our weather and traffic report for today featuring CFRC's Jesse Bell.
This is your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. Friday, December 12th, another minus 5 day, but about 4 degrees colder with an overnight low of minus 12. Saturday, December 13th, daytime high of minus 5, overnight low of minus 8. However, with the wind chill, it will feel closer to minus 12. Sunday, December 14th, daytime high of minus 4, overnight low of minus 10. And then kicking off next week, Monday, December 15th, daytime high of minus 5 with an overnight low of minus 13. This is your City of Kingston traffic report for the week. Reminder that winter parking restrictions are in place as of December 1st. During December and March, overnight street parking will be banned only if the weather conditions require it. During January and February, overnight on-street parking is not permitted no matter the weather conditions. With construction season winding down, there are fewer road closures than you would typically expect.
Here are three relevant road closures in the Kingston area. Aberdeen Street, William 2 Johnson is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging. Albert Street, Princess 2 Mac is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging at 484 Albert Street. And Berry Street, Queen 2 Colborne is closed for construction-related activity at 283 Queen Street. Here are some other delays to be aware of. Bay Ridge Drive, Milford 2 Henderson, expect delays for the construction of new active transportation infrastructure and intersection upgrades. Catwoods Drive, Centennial 2 Gardeners, expect delays for the construction of a new multi-use pathway. Front Road, Sand Bay 2 Country Club, expect delays for the installation of sanitary and water main for Utilities Kingston. Traffic will be reduced to one lane in each direction. Please be aware of lane shifts, traffic speed limits, and share the lane signage. Victoria Street and Earl Street, expect delays while a contractor mobilizes the site to start work on the second phase of reconstruction of sewer, water main, sidewalks, and road.
Thank you, Jesse. Now back to more local news. The city's Toys for Tickets campaign this year saw 249 toys for a total of over $6,000 in toy value donated to Salvation Army's Toy Mountain campaign in lieu of parking tickets between November 1st and December 3rd. The total represents nearly double last year's donations, bringing the total number of toys donated since it started in 2005 to well over 4,000. Laura St. Pierre with the city's Bylaw Enforcement Services sat down with CFRC to chat about this year's campaign. For listeners who might not know, I was wondering if you could give us a bit of an overview of what the Toys for Tickets campaign is.
Sure. So the Toys for Ticket campaign provides an opportunity for individuals who pay parking tickets in the month of November to pay for their parking ticket with a toy instead.
Awesome. And this year saw 249 toys donated, almost double last year's total. What was your team's reaction when this final tally came in?
So I think about halfway through the month, we received an update from the payment center that we were already past our previous year of 2024 and shared that with all our staff. And we were extremely excited to hear this information and sort of excited to see how many received in total.
Awesome. And do you think there's any particular reason why it was so high this year?
Yeah, so we moved to an open collection sort of model this year. So in previous years, we had only specific collection dates. So this year from November 1st to December 3rd, those who received tickets were able to attend City Hall, and they were able to pay for their parking ticket with a toy, and this made participation easier and a lot more flexible.
And what did it mean for you and your team to see the community participate in this way?
Yeah, so I think it's it means a lot for our team, and especially how we're able to partner with the Salvation Army. And we're just able to see how much the community is able to come together and to see this increase in toys during our collection this year is something we really appreciated.
St. Pierre also says Kingstonians came through in a crucial time, with Salvation Army reporting increased need this year.
So when we dropped off the toys to Salvation Army, they did mention that they were receiving an increase this year and with individuals in need for wanting to receive sort of toys to be able to pass along to children to open up during the holiday season. So that volume has increased, so they were appreciative of us bringing in sort of the toys from the ticket campaign this year, and that's something that they share. And in general, we also received information from the payment center that people were voluntarily bringing in toys as well. So individuals they even received tickets were bringing in toys this year, which we thought was very neat, something we appreciated too.
Once again, that was Laura St. Pierre with the city's Bylaw Enforcement Services on this year's Toys for Tickets campaign, making the holidays a little brighter for families in Kingston. This year's Kingston General Hospital Auxiliary's Teddy Bear campaign has officially kicked off. Since the annual campaign launched in 2004, it has raised more than $500,000, providing funds for new equipment for the pediatric program at Kingston Health Sciences Center. Last year, more than 300 teddy bears were delivered to young patients, and community donations brought the hospital past the midway point of its two-year, $55,000 goal for a point-of-care ultrasound machine. This year's campaign runs until December 23rd, with the goal of crossing the finish line on that two-year commitment. Chelsea Reynolds, president of the KGH Auxiliary, sat down with CFRC to chat about this year's campaign. Well, to start us off, so great to have you back. For folks who aren't familiar, I was wondering if you could give us a refresher on what the KGH Teddy Bear Campaign is all about.
So the Teddy Bear Campaign is something that we've been running. This is our 22nd year, and it's a fundraiser that we do, that the auxiliary runs, to raise funds for pediatric care in our KGH site. The bears are available for sponsorship. It costs $100, and all the funds raised goes for equipment for pediatric units.
Mm-hmm. And this is the second year fundraising for a point-of-care ultrasound machine in the pediatric unit. I was wondering if you could speak a bit about that goal, where we're at, how far we have to go.
Yeah, so the last year we made a two-year commitment, and the cost was $55,000. Last year we raised $28,000, so we just need to get basically the same amount again. And then the ultrasound machine stays on the pediatric units, which makes it easier for the families and the patients in particular, because they don't have to go somewhere. They don't have to be wheeled downstairs. They don't have to go where they're not as comfortable, they're not as familiar, and the families can stay right with them. And for the staff, it's right there on the floor. Hopefully they can get results a little bit quicker. Everyone's just a little more at ease.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned last time we chatted, you know, that second year, sometimes it's a little harder to get that push.
Yeah.
I was wondering if you could speak to that, give some words of inspiration for the community.
Yeah. So last year when we first started talking about it, it's new and it's exciting and, oh, we have this big goal. Now this year it sort of feels like, okay, well, now we're trying to finish that off. But it's, you know, it's a great goal to think about that being in the hospital and available for use for our staff and for the benefit of our patients.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to get this, again, awesome piece of equipment, but I was wondering if you could also speak to that immediate impact of, you know, being able to deliver the bears at Christmas time and that kind of aspect of it.
Yeah, so the bears will get delivered, I think it's December 19th, 20th sort of thing. And so that's to any young people who are in the hospital at KGH, at Hotel Dew. We also partner with a hospital and Moose Factory, Winnebago. And so bears are delivered there. And I was actually just approached last week. I was out for a walk and a dad and two daughters came up to me. And 3 years ago, one of the daughters had been in having surgery close to Christmas and she had received a bear. And they recognized me and said, "Are you the teddy bear lady?" And they still remembered that and it had made such an impact on them. And she's doing well, which was lovely. So to hear that 3 years on, and she said, "Thanks again for the bear." It was really, really nice.
Mm-hmm. Yes, people are really making that immediate impact right in our community.
Yes, right. Because, I mean, nobody wants to be in the hospital ever. Nobody wants to be in the hospital at Christmas time, and especially if you're a small person. So to get that bear is just, you know, a little bit of something extra.
Mm-hmm. And for folks who are returning donors or first-time donors, how can they get involved?
The easiest way to donate is through Canada Helps. And if you just look up KGH Auxiliary and then the Teddy Bear Campaign through there, that's you can direct your funds directly to that. You can also go on the KHSC website and make your way to our page. We have a form. You can fill that out. But Canada Helps is probably the easiest for people this way.
The 2025 Bears will be available for sponsorship until December 23rd and can be purchased by calling 613-549-6666, extension 6352, completing the donation brochure, or by visiting Canada Helps and selecting Teddy Bear Campaign 2025 in the donation details section. The holiday season is starting to take shape downtown, and with it comes one of the Downtown Kingston BIA's annual traditions, a new pewter ornament collection. Now in its 31st year, the series continues to document some of the city's most iconic buildings and landmarks. This year's lineup includes three new buildings, a well-loved park, and a piece marking a major local college anniversary. I spoke with Jan McDonald, Downtown Kingston's Director of Events, about this year's collection. So the collection has been part of our holiday season for over 30 years now. I was wondering if you could tell us a bit about the tradition and what you think makes it such a hit every year.
I know, it's kind of crazy that every year we still find buildings and these sort of cultural sort of assets in the city to make into pewter ornaments. You'd think after this is our 31st year that we would sort of run out of buildings, but no, Kingston is so historically rich that, you know, it seems like we have an endless pool to choose from. So, so we've been doing this for 31 years, five ornaments every year. We get suggestions. We have so many customers who have every single collection from year one. They get super excited whenever we do the new release. But we get suggestions all the time. A lot of suggestions from Kingstonians, which is great. It's always a fun thing to do. I think it's really nice for locals, but then, you know, we have a lot of collections that are like Queens buildings or, you know, nice sort of commemorative things that you can give as gifts, which is really great. So if you have, you know, kids attending Queens, it's a nice little Christmas gift. We do things like, you know, tragically hip collections. So if you have like hip fans in your family, I think they give really well as gifts. And then it's just sort of a nice thing to sort of recognize those places in the city that have, you know, special meaning for you.
Mm-hmm. And I was wondering, this lineup includes a lot of iconic places in Kingston. I was wondering if you could walk us through the 2025 releases and maybe a bit about how some of them were chosen.
So this year's lineup is really wonderful. So we start out next week with the Bages Brewery, which is a beautiful building that has since been turned into condos. But it is on Wellington Street. Following that, we have Louise House. So Louise House is on Johnson Street, and it's sort of an architectural treasure. It began as a new schoolhouse for the Kingston Board of Trustees. Just a really, really beautiful building. Queens students would especially recognize this building because it is now the Starbucks on the corner of Johnson and Division. So that's the building we're talking about there. The Broom Factory is week three. So one of the main, I would say, live music venues in the city used to be a Broom Factory. And now, like I said, it operates as a live music venue. It also houses like the Kingston Canadian Film Festival, crew, so lots of sort of creative brains in that building. Fourth week is McBurney Park, or more commonly known as Skeleton Park. So Skeleton Park is, you know, definitely one of the most popular sort of gathering spaces for young families in the downtown core. They do a wonderful festival every year, Skeleton Park Arts Fest. And it has like a pretty fun history. It was established in 1800s as Kingston's upper burial ground, which is sort of why it got the sort of Skeleton Park name, but very, very cool. And then finally, week five, it's sort of the ornament itself has a number of different sort of iconic emblems of the Royal Military College of Canada. So it's RC, the RMC ornament, which again, we've done a lot with Queens. We have in the past sort of touched on some of the RMC monuments, but this is sort of an all-encompassing like RMC ornament because their 150th anniversary is coming up. So that's this year's lineup.
Awesome. And I'm sure a lot of these were community suggestions, but I was wondering if any of these were like, people have been asking for them like crazy and you guys were like, we have to do it this year.
Definitely Skeleton Park, we get a lot. That one's a little bit tricky. Buildings are a little bit more simple in terms of rendering into an ornament. Skeleton Park is a very cool one because we sort of used an aerial shot to sort of fashion the ornament. But the Skeleton Park community, sort of that community, it's a very close-knit community. We get a lot of suggestions for that one. And then I'm not sure how the other ones came in. I think we always look for buildings that have some kind of historical significance so that we can tell the story of the building. I do think it was someone from Queens who talked about the Starbucks building, though, because... yeah, we know it as the Starbucks, but it's kind of cool that that it started as a schoolhouse.
Mm-hmm. You're also including past ornaments this year, which is a new kind of thing. I was wondering if you could talk a bit about that. Yeah. What made you guys this year decide to offer that?
Yeah, so on our website, which is downtownkingston.ca, we still have ornaments available from past collections. So we definitely, you know, popular ones go pretty quick. And so, you know, they tend to sell out pretty fast. But it's kind of surprising going back 31 years what we still have in our catalog here. And so you can go on the website and take a look through the years. Maybe you're trying to fill in some gaps in your own collection or just kind of see what we've done historically. But those are available to purchase. They're around $8 each. And then we've put together little themed collections this year. So we have one that's a Tragically Hip themed collection. So in there, it would be the Gord Downie Pier, the Hip sign at Slush Puppy Place, things like that. We've also done one which is sort of those classic Kingston sort of buildings. When you know, you come to Kingston, you have to see City Hall, you have to see Kingston Penn, that sort of thing. So really fun, cute little themed collections that are also available on the website.
And you also have that connection where folks bring their downtown shopping receipts. I was wondering if you could just talk about that connection to supporting local business as well.
Yeah, so the whole program started, like you said, we are a BIA, and so it's really important that we support our member businesses and try to drive business and keep downtown as lively and vibrant as we can. And so in order to purchase the new collection, so the old collections are available on our website, as I mentioned. The new collection, you have to present $25 worth of receipts from downtown. So it could be a cafe, could be a retail shop, it could be your dentist, it could be food basics like the grocery store. So any downtown business, you present $25 worth of receipts and the ornament is $10. So, and the ornaments are available in three locations starting on Monday. So they're available at the Grand Theater box office. They're available at the Slush Puppy Place box office and the Visitor Information Center, which is across from City Hall. So you go in with your $25 worth of receipts and the ornaments are available to you at $10.
You've been listening to Jan McDonald with the Downtown Kingston BIA on this year's new pewter ornament collection. For more details on the designs and the release schedule, more information is available at downtownkingston.ca. We have a few updates directly from the City of Kingston. Kingston Transit is rolling out several service changes in the new year aimed at improving consistency and reliability across the system. Starting Monday, January 5th, passengers will see refined schedules building on the adjustments made earlier this fall. The city says these updates will help maintain service coverage throughout Kingston and restore more frequent trips on select express routes during peak hours. Highlights include Express 501-502 running every 12 minutes during weekday peaks and every 15 minutes midday, Express 701-702 returning to 15-minute peak service, most core routes including 1, 2, 11, 13, 14, and 3132 will stay at their current levels. Construction detours on routes 2, 6, 22, and 3132 will continue into 2026. Routes 11 and 15 will once again serve the Gardner Center, and weekday routes 16A, 16B will be discontinued after December 19th and merged into a single Route 16. Riders can preview updated maps and schedules now at kingstontransit.ca or plan trips using the Transit app. In more transit news, with the holidays approaching, Kingston Transit will shift to a modified schedule from December 22nd to January 4th. Weekdays will follow a Saturday schedule, and weekends will run on the usual Sunday schedule. A few key dates to note, December 25th and January 1st, there will be no service. On December 31st, free transit all day with late-night service on Route N1 until 3 a.m. Customer service office hours will vary, including closures on December 24th, 25th, 26th, and January 1st. Riders are encouraged to check the transit app for real-time information and trip planning throughout the holiday period. The City of Kingston says the recycling convenience drop-off depot at the Kingston Area Recycling Center will close at the end of this year. The depot located on Lappin's Lane will cease operations on January 1st due to a lack of sustainable long-term funding from Circular Materials Ontario, the provincial organization that took over Kingston's Blue and Gray Bin programs this summer. The last day to use the drop-off depot will be on Wednesday, December 31st, from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. The city notes that all residential properties in Kingston either receive or are eligible for curbside recycling collection, which is now the primary method supported under provincial regulations. For more information about recycling programs, you can visit the city's website. The City of Kingston is exploring the creation of a municipal service corporation to manage water and wastewater services as the city prepares for significant growth. Municipal service corporations, or MSCs, are corporations established by municipalities to oversee specific services or assets. They remain fully owned by the municipality and continue to operate with public oversight. City CAO Lainey Hurdle says Kingston's growing population and aging water infrastructure are placing increasing financial pressure on the municipality. An MSC could offer more flexibility, increased revenue opportunities, and dedicated governance for water and wastewater operations. A similar model already exists for Kingston Hydro, which is owned 100% by the city. Residents are invited to read the business case and share feedback through a survey on Get Involved Kingston until January 9th, 2026. A report including public feedback will go to City Council early next year. The City of Kingston has released its 2025-26 Winter Services Response Plan, outlining supports available for people experiencing homelessness during the winter months. The plan includes information on emergency beds and overnight services, weekday and weekend daytime drop-in sites, warming centers, and street outreach and prevention diversion services. The city says the plan is designed to adapt as service needs change and as different sites adjust their status or capacity over the season. Several locations are scheduled to expand capacity later this winter. The Winter Services Response Plan will continue to be updated throughout the season. Details can be found on the city's website under Homelessness Services. Once again, those were a few messages directly from the City of Kingston. Before we wrap up this morning, we're going to run through your Friday forecast, a roundup of just some of the events Kingston has to offer to pull you out of hibernation this weekend. If you're looking for some holiday magic, the A-Line Ballerina Nutcracker Ballet twirls into the Kingston Grand Theater at 5:30 p.m. tonight, a perfect way to kick off a festive weekend. If you're feeling a little more competitive tonight, Trivia at Wild Wing Kingston starts at 7 p.m. Tomorrow on December 13th, you can start your morning wandering through the Kingston Public Market in Springer Market Square, open from 9 to 5 with fresh goods, gift ideas, and that cozy downtown feeling. If you have little ones or are just a big fan of dinosaurs, All Aboard the Dino Train is running from 9 to 4 at the Pump House Museum, always a hit. And when night rolls in, head to Time Out Bar for karaoke at 9 p.m. On Sunday, December 14th, if your vocal cords survived, you've got two more chances to sing it out. Karaoke night at The Merchant at 8 p.m. and then a late night round at The Toucan starting at 10:30 p.m. A perfect way to wrap up the weekend. That's your quick Friday forecast. If you have an event or concert you'd like to add to our online or on-air calendar, you can reach out today via cfrc.ca or at CFRC Music on Instagram using the link tree in our bio. That is all things current in Kingston for this week. Thank you for listening to CFRC's local news programming, brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. To listen on the go and hear more from some of our guests, head to our podcast network at podcast.cfrc.ca. Be sure to stay tuned for more CFRC programming coming up next.
What'll I Wear offers the best in vintage, funky, one-of-a-kind treasures, clothing, accessories, and a fabulous selection of jewels, vintage and new. Find the cutest purse, the most dashing of hats and sunglasses, everything to complete your individual look. What'll I Wear has it all. They can dress you from top to bottom. Find your new fashion fave at What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street in Kingston. Visit their new location and follow them on Facebook to keep up to date with what's in store at What'll I Wear. CFRC 101.9 FM, the Kingston Music Office, and our sponsors, Long & McQuaid and Modern City Taxi, are pleased to announce the 2025 Release Radar Listenership Survey is now open. Select your top 10 singles and top 10 albums and EPs released in Kingston this year by local artists, and enter for a chance to win $1,000 in prizes from CFRC and our friends at Long & McQuaid, KPP Concerts, Kingston Canadian Film Festival, The Screening Room, and Black Dog Hospitality. Show your love for local music. Get in on the action today via CFRC.ca, proudly supporting local artists since 1922. Coming up now on this week's Release Radar, in partnership with the Kingston Music Office, we're pleased to present Medicine Man, the third single from the Empties' upcoming EP. The song taps into their hard rock influences for a more energetic sound than they've ever done before. Follow the band at The Empties Music on Instagram to stay up to date for upcoming shows and their EP release. And don't forget to check out the CFRC 2025 Release Radar Listener's Choice Survey, happening now via CFRC.ca, where you can vote for your top 10 local singles and albums released in Kingston this year and enter for a chance to win great raffle prizes. Want to be highlighted next time? Complete the Release Radar submission form on the Kingston Music Office website or via visit kingston.music on Instagram. In the meantime, stream Medicine Man by The Empties on your favorite platforms and enjoy it here with us now on CFRC 101.9 FM.
Chances, smoke in your eyes, I just
CFRC 101.9 FM, the Kingston Music Office, and our sponsors, Long & McQuaid and Modern City Taxi, are pleased to announce the 2025 Release Radar Listenership Survey is now open. Select your top 10 singles and top 10 albums and EPs released in Kingston this year by local artists, and enter for a chance to win $1,000 in prizes from CFRC and our friends at Long & McQuaid, KPP Concerts, Kingston Canadian Film Festival, The Screening Room, and Black Dog Hospitality. Show your love for local music. Get in on the action today via CFRC.ca, proudly supporting local artists since 1922. Coming up now on this week's Release Radar, in partnership with the Kingston Music Office and supported by your friends at Modern City Taxi, we're pleased to present a single by Kentucky called Born American, a song that is both a question and a reflection, urging listeners to consider the human impact of our world's shifting borders and systems. With vivid imagery and raw emotion, the song and its accompanying video invite you to feel deeply and reflect on compassion and understanding. Want to be highlighted next time? Complete the Release Radar submission form on the Kingston Music Office website or via visit kingston.music on Instagram. In the meantime, stream Born American by Kentucky on your favorite platforms and enjoy it here with us now on CFRC 101.9 FM.
In the hospital, all alone in the middle of the night, a lonely mother gave her life. Thunderstorm, the dead woman's hair. American. Oh, they could not know they would be called to the street and called to defend their sons and daughters. From the men with the masks and the jackets that say ICE, you better come and be. It's your birthright in the land of the free. Men don't mean nothing even though you were born American. Like a foreign crown. Till at the age of three, he was adopted by a serviceman and his wife who cried, tears in her eyes. Look at him. Look at him. He was born American. Generosity, his sense of community, his personal commitment to personal responsibility. These are just a few of the ways that people in his town could tell that he was born American. He was quick to fight, but he was also quick to forgive. He was cool, and he was handsome. Would be called to the street and called to defend their sons and daughters. From the man with the masks and the jackets that say, I see.